Therapy Notes is the highest rated EHR, practice management, and billing software for mental health professionals. Its all-in-one platform is designed to streamline all aspects of your practice, from connecting with clients via secure messages to scheduling, notes, billing, and more. You can trust Therapy Notes has you covered. And one of the best parts? 24/7 customer service with a live person. It's beyond easy to get help over the phone or by email at any time of day from their knowledgeable and friendly representatives. The best time to give Therapy Notes a try is now. Sign up for your free trial by going to therapynotes.com, clicking Start My Free Trial, and accessing your first 2 months free with the promo code CHAT. See why Therapy Notes is the most trusted EHR for behavioral health professionals today.
Therapists, ready to stop just listening and start doing? I offer several ways to work with me and accelerate your trauma expertise. You can join my Trauma Therapist Network membership community for ongoing support, book a one-on-one clinical consultation with me for personalized guidance, or buy my course for clinicians on supporting survivors of sexual trauma, and check out the retreats coming up in 2026. All that info and more is on the For Therapists page of Trauma Therapist Network, and you can find a link in the show notes.
Therapy Chat Podcast, episode 530.
This is the Therapy Chat Podcast with Laura Reagan, LCSWC. The information shared in this podcast is not a substitute for seeking help from a licensed mental health professional. And now, here's your host, Laura Reagan, LCSWC.
Hi, welcome back to Therapy Chat. I'm your host, Laura Reagan, and today I'm so thrilled to be speaking again with my respected colleague and friend, Dr. Leslie Korn. Have you ever wondered about why so many trauma survivors have chronic illness, chronic pain disorders, autoimmune disorders? Have you ever noticed how your clients with chronic pain and chronic illness and autoimmune disorders tend to have unresolved trauma, attachment wounds from childhood? Well, I've noticed this, and I've been talking about it for a long time. You've heard me talking about the ACEs data, the study from 2007. You've heard me talking about that all the years that I've been doing this podcast, and you may or may not have caught the new info that I now have been diagnosed with a chronic illness, an autoimmune pain disorder, which is fibromyalgia. So when I had the chance to interview Leslie Korn about her newly reissued second edition of her integrative Nutrition Essentials for Mental Health book, and she has also recently reissued Rhythms of Recovery. So when I had the chance to talk to her about these books, I jumped at the opportunity to ask her everything I wanted to know about fibromyalgia, because as I learned to manage my symptoms of fibromyalgia, I recognize that there's a link between what I eat, the vitamins and minerals in my body, my stress, my sleep. It's all connected, of course. That's what integrative means. And Leslie just let me pick her brilliant brain and ask everything I wanted to know. So if you are someone who has an autoimmune disorder, or if you are someone who works with clients who have autoimmune issues, chronic illness, chronic fatigue, pain disorders, you are going to want to listen to this episode as well as last week's episode with Chelsea Haverly and Emily Young, and the week before that when I talked with Krista Hines. All of these conversations fit together, and more of our clients are going to be bringing these concerns over the years to come. So we need to know how to work with them using mind, body, and spirit methods, including integrative nutrition, spirituality, movement, somatics, all of it. So I hope you will find this conversation as enriching as I did. Yes, it was selfish of me to ask all these questions about fibromyalgia, but fibromyalgia is very common. Many of my clients have it. I have it. Many therapists have it. Many other helping professionals have it. And it's often not diagnosed. I think I've had it for at least 11 years, and it just got diagnosed this year, despite me going to many, many, many different providers for help with my symptoms. And no one mentioned it until someone finally did. So don't give up if you're trying to get answers for your health issues, and think outside the box. If the providers that you're going to aren't giving you the answers that are aligned with what you know, what your body is telling you, then keep searching and know that there's more info out there. But you also want to be sure that you get your information from credible sources. And someone like Leslie Korn, who has a master's in public health, as well as a doctoral degree in psychology, and has researched and trained and worked directly with people using integrative health methods for decades, is definitely someone whose knowledge is trustworthy. So I hope you will enjoy our conversation. And if you are a listener who loves Therapy Chat, please go to Apple Podcasts and leave a rating and review. It really helps people find the show. And last but not least, check out the Trauma Therapist Network website for special offers this summer and retreats that are coming up. I'm adding more retreats in the U.S. and internationally. So please go check out traumatherapistnetwork.com for all the info. Thank you so much for listening. Hi, welcome back to Therapy Chat. I'm your host, Laura Reagan, and with me today is someone I always love talking to and I have learned so much from over the years, Dr. Leslie Korn. Leslie, thank you so much for coming back to Therapy Chat today.
It's always a pleasure to spend time with you, Laura.
Thank you. That's how I feel about you too. Well, this one is a conversation that I've been holding my breath waiting for, because for one thing, I had to reschedule once already. And so, you know, it's been prolonged, but I've been waiting because I have something I'm just dying to talk to you about. But before we get into our topic for today, will you start off by just telling our listeners, for those who haven't heard you on Therapy Chat before or aren't familiar with your work, will you let people know a little more about who you are and what you do?
Sure. Well, I began my work as a somatic therapist, as a body worker doing polarity therapy and cranial sacral therapy in 1977. And that took me into psychotherapy and training in psychodynamic and post-trauma therapy. And then I integrated those disciplines into a body-oriented psychotherapy practice for the treatment of PTSD and complex trauma primarily. But of course, you can't treat trauma without treating the body. I'd already begun treating the body. And so it also then led me into all things somatic, including nutrition. So for these number of years, I've had what really I call an integrative medicine for mental health practice. I work with complex issues, people who've really been suffering for years, depression, anxiety, insomnia, but also the physical side, autoimmune disorders, chronic pain, chronic digestive issues, just everything that just feels out of rhythm, out of whack, and just has never gotten the full picture. So I do a lot of work around testing, analysis, and developing whole programs and whole, what we think of as lifestyle protocols, developed what I call the Brainbow Blueprint, and a few years ago published a book called that, which is really addressing the whole person to have a way to feel like there's an individual and personalized approach. What is it that I need and how can I get what I need to finally cope with these many challenges that generally originate with high ACEs exposure and the complexity of exposure to overwhelming experiences in our childhood. The other piece of what I do is I wear a hat. I run a nonprofit. I work for the Center for World Indigenous Studies, which is an Indigenous-directed nonprofit. And I run the Center for Traditional Medicine, which is the culturally informed, indigenously informed counterpart to that, which is working in the field of traditional indigenous medicine and promoting that globally. And the third piece I'll share with you, and thank you for listening so patiently, is I've recently returned to my passion of documentary filmmaking, and I've just completed my fourth documentary. So that's a little bit about me. As well as you know, I'm crazy about dogs. You've got it all now.
Oh my gosh. Well, I'm crazy about dogs too. And I am curious about your documentary filmmaking piece. Can you say a little bit about what your new film is about?
Sure.
Or well, whatever you'd like to say about it.
The three shorts are available. One is about the medical massage project that I've run here in rural Mexico and indigenous communities for many years. It's called Cradling the Heart. And we actually filmed it during the pandemic. So you'll see us all masked up. And it's about the work that we do bringing medical massage into rural indigenous communities and teaching people. This particularly was about diabetes and really treating diabetes and helping people cope with diabetes, both the physical side, but also the mental side. There's a lot of depression there too. And then I did a film on the tree called Kapomo, which is also known as the breadnut. And it's a traditionally accessed and cultivated tree in Mexico on both the East Coast and the West Coast in very specific areas. And it is called a famine food tree. It produces a delicious seed that we roast and make either a pudding out of or roast and make a coffee substitute out of. And it's very rich in amino acids. And it's been a traditional food for millennia, and it's under threat due to climate change. So I worked with my friends and colleagues in the village where I lived for over 25 years to produce the film and direct it, wrote it. And then we took this lens up into the Pacific Northwest, where we've done a lot of work in food sovereignty and food systems revitalization with indigenous communities up there. And we did a film called Salal and Cedar, which is about really the traditional foods revitalization and herbs movement in the Pacific Northwest. The film that we are just about to release, that I've got just the trailer on available, but I'll show you where to find all these. It is a bit of a departure. It's a 97-minute film about a nodal indigenous uprising in Canada in 1980. And it is about the mobilization of this uprising to protest the potential erasure of indigenous rights and land rights in Canada. And so what we did is we went back and we interviewed some of the lead participants, the leaders of this movement 45 years later. And so it's an historical documentary about this indigenous uprising called the Constitution Express. It's called Breakpoint: The Untold Story of the Constitution Express. So that's a little bit about my documentary work.
I'm so glad you shared that. Thank you.
I mean, thank you.
It kind of, you know, It's almost like there's two Leslies. There's, you know, Harvard educated Dr. Leslie Korn, MPH, and there's Leslie, who runs the Center for World Indigenous Studies and lives among Indigenous peoples and is very reverent to the ways of Indigenous life.
Same Leslie. So,
yeah. It's one Leslie, but it's like, you know, what the sort of like which part of your wisdom is being, you know, which it's sort of like, am I impressed by how scholarly and academic you are, or am I impressed by how right there in, you know, with your hands in the earth you are working? And I'm just very impressed by you and the way you show up in the world.
You're filling up my cup, Laura. You know, the binding theme is the same as yours. It's trauma. And mm-hmm. we work on the personal level and the community level. And this, what this work does, recognizes the ongoing trauma of colonization. And I know that's not the topic we're going to delve into today, but it has a lot of analogies and a lot of relevance, because many of us, I'm a product of the settler population. My great-grandparents migrated under trauma, perhaps like yours. But we still suffer from unresolved slavery trauma and the lack of resolution of the fact that this land was colonized. People don't think about it much. They're in denial about it a lot, but it has led to ongoing post-colonial trauma in people's lives. The loss of food, the loss of land base, and how that leads to the kinds of illnesses that you and I are going to talk about today. So in many ways, I think what nourishes me in terms of my commitment to social justice is working with individuals and helping them find balance in their lives and actualize and discover what gives them meaning, but also that spectrum that these are larger than individual issues and that they occur on a much greater social terrain that should be addressed somehow. So I think that's, for me, that binding theme.
I agree with you. And it feels like when you said, like, that's not what we're talking about today, but it is what we're talking about today too, because it's, you know, it's an impact of this extractive, erasive drive force that colonization is. And what we're going to talk about is integrative health and mental health in relation to autoimmune and chronic illness, which I don't feel that it's really that much separate from the post-colonial trauma that you're talking about, you know, in a very broad sense. And because like these illnesses arising from trauma and the way that a lot of autoimmune disorders show up more in marginalized groups, you know, women and people of color and people. So I'm not gonna go all into that right now, but yeah, I feel like the theme is very woven in. And I just wanted to say one more thing to what you said about that post-colonial trauma is that you said that you come from settler. What did you say? What was the, how did you say that?
Those of us who are from other locations, which is the majority of people in the United States, and the film is about Canada, so it's very similar. Yeah. In Mexico, where I live, is very similar in terms of European contact in the 15th century. We do come from other populations, even if it's generations ago. I think it's very important to recognize that, and it gives us a responsibility to address our role in settling in a country, in a landmass that's not ours to begin with. And I think it gives us a responsibility to try to enact equity. We're not going to undo what's been done, but it doesn't preclude restitution, equity, action, recognition. And I think we're in such a state of denial. I was having a conversation with someone recently who was talking about the ongoing denial around slavery trauma, which persists. And I said, once that, if and when that gets the proper attention and resolutions and efforts it requires, then people may be ready to cope with the reality of colonization. But that remains a much more deeply hidden erasure, attempted erasure.
Very true. Very true. And so what I was thinking is like the idea of moral injury also being, you know, passed down intergenerationally and kind of part of the denial, like I can't see that because then I'd have to feel, you know, something that feels intolerable. And you mentioned slavery, but the genocide of the indigenous peoples of North America and the harm that was done through Central and South America as well in the name of colonization, it's all there, still impacting everyone, even though we might
and
not want to think
in the
about
name
it.
Of religion, let's not forget
yes.
that, because I think we are in the midst of that kind of trauma right now in the name of religion.
Yep. We're on the same
page.
Well,
we've gotten far afield of nutrition, but
well, you know, foodways are part of culture, right? So that's where
absolutely
that's where we come back.
Central. Yeah.
So the reason that I asked you to talk about, I mentioned autoimmune and chronic illness, but really what I'm thinking of specifically is fibromyalgia. And I'm selfishly asking you to talk about that because I recently got that diagnosis a couple months ago. And I've, you know, I've been very sensitive to, aware of, and caring about autoimmune and chronic illness for a long time. I have a lot of people in my family who live with those issues and a lot of my clients because, like you, my clients mostly have complex PTSD. But now that I have my own diagnosis, obviously, it's hitting a little bit differently. And so when I knew I was going to get to talk to you, I said, well, I would like to talk with Leslie about how does integrative nutrition factor into healing from fibromyalgia or managing symptoms, but really also like what's going on with fibromyalgia, what's going on in the body there. Maybe you can kind of talk about how trauma relates to these autoimmune problems, and then maybe a little more specifically we can get into fibromyalgia. That seem okay to you?
Sure. Sure. Yeah. You know, I first came across fibromyalgia as a body worker. And what I discovered, this is back in the late 70s, let's say, before fibromyalgia really had a term. It's been around for years, millennia, but it's one of those terms that has often defied nosology and diagnosis. People have stayed away from it. And we'll talk in a little bit about the 19th century because I found a fascinating connection there. But when I first was working with particularly women with fibromyalgia, they all had histories of very significant trauma. And I began to consider that relationship. And so as a clinician, I think many of us who worked with people early on in the 70s and 80s saw I can't say I ever saw anyone with fibromyalgia without a history of trauma. I don't know. There could be a small percentage of people, certainly. And when we say trauma, we could also add into that just chronic, overwhelming, persistent stress. So over the years, fibromyalgia was often ignored and decried, just like chronic fatigue has been, or chemical sensitivity syndrome in some ways continues to be. So we have what I call these culturally defined diseases, like what's acceptable and what isn't. But fibromyalgia is essentially, people tend to get diagnosed if they see a rheumatologist because they complain about this chronic physical pain and physical discomfort, but it's essentially a sleep disorder. People don't always get diagnosed based on the disruption of their sleep. What tends to take them for help is this chronic achiness and pain. And then we've got the characteristic fibro points, which have gone through some rethinking in the, let's say, the last 30 years by the American Society of Rheumatology. And so when I'm working with people with this diagnosis, and you can certainly appreciate this as a trauma specialist, trauma is like the fountain that flows along many streams. And it can flow into an autoimmune disorder. It can flow into a chronic pain. It can flow into substance abuse. It can flow into chronic GI. And sometimes that fountain flows into several streams at once, or sometimes it flows into one in particular. And I've come to think about it that way because in many ways, treatment is the same. The effects of trauma affect what we call the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis. It affects our ability to manage stress. It affects our ability to have a balanced neuroendocrine system. It can either flow into the stream of overexciting our immune system, putting it into a hyperactive state leading to an autoimmunity, or it can flow into the stream of a subimmunity of suppressing immune function. But by and large, trauma leads to these chronic foundational disruptions that make it harder for us to manage stress, that either causes us, you know, in our conventional thinking about PTSD, we either overreact or underreact. And there's an analogy to that in our bodies. We get symptoms of overreaction or underreaction. We feel too much pain or we're numb to pain. We're medicating with downers or we're medicating with uppers. But it almost doesn't matter, except obviously to the need for the individual to get better and feel better. But the underlying imbalances tend to, at their source, at the fountain, begin with a disruption of all the organ systems and it elevates blood glucose. And if it does that too much, then you get diabetes type 2, highly associated with chronic stress and trauma. And back to culture, we see high rates of diabetes type 2 in marginalized populations because of the stress of bigotry and hypervigilance of living in an oppressive society that is filled with bigotry. And so when I think about treatment, we think, yes, about symptoms and relieving suffering, but I like to think about helping identify what's out of balance, how has trauma and the chronicity and then the reactions to it. Maybe there's been that sequela of now you're dealing with a liver that's trying to process drugs and alcohol. So you've got this other layer, or sugar, or whatever that may be, or maybe chronic benzodiazepine use because sleep has been so disrupted. So we kind of weave our way back through these rivers to the source, which is how do we support bringing the body back into balance? How do we support adrenal function? How do we support glucose metabolism? How do we help someone sleep and relax that hyperactive autonomic nervous system? How do we help someone digest again? Because digestion is ruled by the autonomic nervous system. That's why we see so much disruption with trauma to the GI system. And then it's teasing out, where is that occurring? Is it in the stomach? Is it in the small intestine? Is it in the colon? Is it in a spastic sphincter, the anal sphincter with hemorrhoids and chronic pain? So we're continuously going back to the source. And it's the same with fibro. Fibro is a river that comes out of trauma that generally is a disruption of the stress response in the body and the autonomic response in the body. And then we look at each individual at the core, because we might be treating this dis-ease, the being out of ease, called fibromyalgia. But when we go back to the core and we look at the gut and we look at stress response, we look at sleep, it can look very different from one person to another. And that's why it's not a cookie cutter treatment. Mm-hmm. It's really saying, okay, Laura, for whatever reason, this is manifesting like this in you, but let's not throw the kitchen sink at symptoms. Let's get you sleeping better and let's get you pain relief. But let's really look at your core functioning. What are your adrenals doing? What's your hypothalamus doing? What exactly is your sleep pattern? How are you digesting? Are you able to absorb nutrients that are going to nourish your brain and nourish your pain receptors? And then we come to a lifestyle plan that's really fitted just for you.
Yeah, I mean, thank you for the explanation. And that's the challenge with fibromyalgia. And I know many chronic illnesses, as I learn about it, and I learn, you know, things like, you know, I need to get my sleep. I need to get more deep sleep. I sleep plenty, but I don't get enough deep sleep. And so what I've read and learned so far, and this seems to align with what you said, the sleep issue is not, it's like being too hypervigilant to settle into deep sleep. It's like my brain won't completely let me not be watching out for danger. And it makes sense because some of my traumatic experiences happened while I was sleeping.
I just had a conversation with a supervisee about this just a few hours ago, about someone whose sleep is disrupted. And I said, do a deep sleep history. You can use the Pittsburgh Sleep Scale. You can use the Insomnia Severity Index. But a clinician is always wise to ask, what was your sleep like growing up? When do you remember your sleep first being disrupted? What was going on? Was there fighting downstairs? Were there bottles being thrown? Was there yelling, or were you alone? What were the circumstances of sleep? Because then often we're dealing with lifelong patterns that just often get progressively worse. And oftentimes people don't remember until they're asked. And that, I think, is so much our role as clinicians to trigger those memories. Oh, I hadn't thought about that, but now I'm remembering when I was 9 years old. And then putting those pieces of the puzzle together, because oftentimes when we seek help, let's say for fibromyalgia, maybe there's help from this kind of a clinician, but there's a whole story going on over here that could aid if there were someone asking that information. So I think we can do that as clinicians.
You mentioned the Pittsburgh Sleep Scale, and you said another thing. Can you
There's
repeat
a,
what that
an
was?
Insomnia Severity Index. So those are a couple of standardized scales that lead you through some very good questions that can complement your qualitative questioning.
That's wonderful. And I'll just say for all the clinicians who are listening, we have to ask a lot more about trouble sleeping. Like clients will say, you know, we might ask, so how is your sleep? And they say, oh, I don't sleep, or I only get 6 hours of sleep every night, or I sleep plenty. I usually get about 5 hours and that's all I need. But, you know, in just what I said, there's a lot more questions we should ask, but we need to be asking at minimum, we need to be asking about falling asleep, what's happening in your brain when you're trying to fall asleep, what do you notice in your body? What are you staying asleep? Are you having dreams, even nightmares? Are, you know, like we need to be really curious about sleep to a deep level because it's so significant to health.
Indeed, it is. I would go so far as to say that without a good enough sleep, mental health and physical health will not be achieved. And then, of course, when we think about sleep, we have to think about circadian rhythm, which is disrupted in fibromyalgia. And we can test for circadian rhythm. There are a biological test of testing your cortisol, because cortisol, the hormone cortisol and circadian rhythm are one and the same. And it gives us insight into the stage of adaptation to stress that the individual has. And then that can inform treatment about how we're going to intervene. And what's so important is that circadian rhythm is such a natural biological rhythm that it is central to all of the lifestyle support we're helping our clients achieve. And so it becomes like that stream of circadian rhythm flowing into sleep, flowing into digestion. Once you get your core rhythm balanced, then things flow from there. And it's also linked to trauma, depression, anxiety, bulimia. It really underlies everything. And of course, bipolar disorder is the quintessential circadian rhythm disorder. So you can see how all of these things are related to that core rhythm and the core rhythm of sleep.
Right. And so as you talk about rhythm, I'm going to hold up one of your books, Rhythms of Recovery, Integrative Medicine for PTSD and Complex Trauma. And this is one of your earlier books, but it's been reissued, right?
Yes, I edited it, so it's quite updated. Yeah, updated
yes.
And published in 2023.
Therapy Notes is consistently transforming the way therapists manage their practices with continuous updates designed to save money and improve efficiency. Their latest game changer, Therapy Fuel, a powerful and fully integrated suite of AI tools that streamline documentation so you can focus more on your clients. With AI features that help by generating progress notes from summaries or transcriptions, creating contact notes directly from clients' secure messages, and automated summaries of client history forms, Therapy Notes users are already reporting hours of saved time and energy. Some other recent feature improvements include automated recurring client payments, electronic secondary insurance billing, and their constantly expanding library of outcome measures. The best time to give Therapy Notes a try is now. Sign up for your free trial by going to therapynotes.com, clicking Start My Free Trial, and accessing your first 2 months free with the promo code CHAT. See why Therapy Notes is the most trusted EHR for behavioral health professionals today.
Therapists ready to stop just listening and start doing? I offer several ways to work with me and accelerate your trauma expertise. You can join my Trauma Therapist Network membership community for ongoing support, book a one-on-one clinical consultation with me for personalized guidance, or buy my course for clinicians on supporting survivors of sexual trauma, and check out the retreats coming up in 2026. All that info and more is on the For Therapists page of Trauma Therapist Network, and you can find a link in the show notes.
So would that be a good place to learn more about the circadian rhythm and cortisol and all of that?
Absolutely. And I did a deep dive into fibromyalgia in this book too, because this book is a somatic focused book. I do a lot on body work and yoga and breathing and acupuncture. It was really my attempt to write a book about the soma, integrating the soma and the psyche into the treatment of trauma, and then all of the major illnesses that arise from trauma. And so fibromyalgia has a significant place in it. And the other thing is I began writing this book. One of the chapters I began writing back in the 80s when I was doing a clinical fellowship at Harvard, where I introduced body work for the treatment of severe mental illness. Now, you can appreciate, Laura, back in the mid-80s, the psychiatrists were apoplectic at the idea of anything somatic or the idea of touching a patient therapeutically. But we saw so much trauma and so much fibromyalgia. But I was very interested in the history of medicine. And it took until the middle 80s, not only for trauma to begin to have its own voice, but for the somatic manifestations of trauma to be even paid attention to, and that included fibromyalgia. So if you look at the history of this disease, so it took me on a journey to explore, well, how else have people thought about this chronic sleep pain syndrome and its relationship to trauma? And I discovered that in the 19th century, the French were quite involved in the treatment of trauma. This trauma was really on the forefront of the work of the French, of Charcot, Genet, Mesmer, certainly are the forefather of our modern hypnotherapy and bioenergetics, and certainly as it kind of led into Freud's work. So what was fascinating is Charcot in particular, they were treating women, particularly at the Salpêtrière, and they understood that trauma underlay these chronic hysterical symptoms, as they were called, hysteria being the earlier name for what we now call PTSD or complex trauma. And Charcot identified what were called hysterogenic points on the body. These were points that he said that when you touched them, either suppressed pain, suppressed traumatic hysteria, traumatic paralysis, or triggered it. And I began thinking about this history and this story in the context of my own work, where I was touching trigger points on the body. And these hysterogenic points that Charcot mapped virtually mapped to what the American College of Rheumatologists mapped as these fibromyalgia diagnostic points on the front of the trunk and on the back. And I thought, you know, what we are seeing, yeah, there we go. What we are seeing, what I began to assert in our modern language is state-dependent memory points. These are points in the body. Acupuncture has a name for them in terms of their electromagnetic potential. But I began to experience with my clients that these were points that, yes, either suppressed memory, suppressed sensation, made people feel good and feel better when you applied pressure, or they could trigger memory. They were state-dependent sources of memory that were crying out and saying, I hurt, I carry trauma in this location in my body. And in my own body work that I write about in the book, my own approach to body work, I talk about deconditioning these points, and that so often, and these points can be deconditioned through therapeutic touch. In this case, therapeutic energetic touch, which was the tradition I worked in, rather than, you know, a lot of massage and oily massage, which isn't always right for trauma survivors, but a very gentle, feel-good pressure that allows people to experience that. And I'll give you one example. I had a client referred to me by her psychologist, and we were working together because she was having serial liposuction. And I believe, and I write about this in the book, that there is such a thing as addiction to surgery, and especially we see a correlation with body dysmorphia and traumatic history and elective surgeries, that when, as clinicians, we're doing intakes and we see a lot of elective surgeries, there's a connection between elective surgeries and trying to go at the body, cut things out, cut out the pain, rearrange things. Liposuction is an example. And this woman was attempting to really suck out the trauma, basically, over and over again. And you can't suck out the trauma. You can't cut out the trauma. And that's not to say that there aren't surgeries that might not repair traumatic problems, absolutely. Broken bones or disc problems, of course. But this is more kind of a roundabout route to try to deal with what I think is state-dependent memory and these hysterogenic points. I worked with this lovely woman for a while, not too long, a few months, where we were touching these areas of the body that she had had liposuction, and they were hysterogenic, or what we call now state-dependent memory. Her father had stroked her on the thighs, had sexually abused her via the thighs. And so we were able to process that. And that takes us back to our psychotherapeutic work, where we are bringing the body in to tell the story and process that and release and decondition that state-dependent memory. Well, just briefly, back to Charcot, what he came up with, which is hysterical, and I'm using that in the way we use it today, like, ha-ha, you won't believe this, is he developed something called the ovary compressor. And it was this metal contraption that he would put on a woman's body to apply pressure to these points. And even by his own words, he would say, well, they would either elicit a traumatic memory or they would suppress the trauma. And it was
that thing. Oh,
I know. And so it was their attempt to try to deal with really, I think, what we see as a dissociative disorder. And I think to some degree, we are talking about, whenever we're talking about a disorder with a traumatic etiology, there's an element of dissociativity in there, in which the pain has been dissociated off from the experience. Well, so that was my exploration into this history of kind of this lineage, as it were, of our understanding of fibromyalgia. And I think we continue to learn about it. And we continue to learn about, of course, the lifestyle treatment and the restoration of the body after it's reacted to those traumatic events.
Yeah, it's a good one to talk about because of how complex it is and how many overlapping symptoms and syndromes, I guess you could say, there are. You have pain, you have body sensations, you have fatigue, weakness, brain fog, mood symptoms.
Mitochondrial dysfunction. Yeah.
So how does mitochondrial dysfunction play in with fibromyalgia?
Well, these are our little engines that could. These are our little engines, and chronic stress hurts our mitochondria. More importantly, not only chronic stress, but lifestyle challenges. Many people who've experienced chronic stress and early life trauma experienced neglect or experienced food insecurity, and our mitochondria need good quality food. we have exposure to chemicals and pesticides that hurt our mitochondria. Most importantly, I think from our point of view as clinicians, the SSRIs and the SNRIs and the antipsychotics hurt mitochondrial respiration. You know, our mitochondria breathe just like we breathe. And so there are all of these things that hurt the respiratory complex of our little organelles, which is the source of our energy. And you had mentioned before when we were talking about Epstein-Barr, viral exposures, these are all fatigue disorders. This is all affecting our COVID, long COVID. These are all affecting mitochondrial function. And so we have risk, we have vulnerability, we have exposures. And they pile one on another until we hit the wall and can't function.
Exactly. And I think that because of the way the Western medical system is, especially here in this country, you know, that it's really difficult to just, if I have all these different symptoms, and this is what, I mean, I think I've had fibromyalgia at least 11 years before getting this diagnosis. And I wasn't seeking this diagnosis or really like, why do I have all these different things? But once I was told, I think you have fibromyalgia, I said, fibromyalgia? No, I don't think my symptoms fall into that at all. And the rheumatologist said, well, what do you know about it? And I said, well, I think it causes nerve pain and it's like unbearable pain and fatigue. And I have constant, relentless pain that's sometimes unbearable, but it doesn't seem like nerve pain and it doesn't seem like it's bad enough. And so he said, well, why don't you read up on it and see if anything that you read, you know, seems familiar. And when I started reading it, I was like, oh my gosh, I have all of this and probably like 5 or 10 things that I learned or associated with fibromyalgia. I hadn't even told him that I had these symptoms. So it was helpful because it explains, you know, all these different weird, seemingly unrelated symptoms all fit under one experience. But it's what's not easy about it. And I'm sure that other people with chronic illness and chronic pain conditions find this to be true as well, that, you know, is it the sleep? Well, what can I do to help the sleep? Well, what's going to help the pain? Is the pain causing the problems with sleep? Is the sleep causing the pain? You know, and it's both. And do I have different vitamin and mineral deficiencies? Yes. Not absorbing folate properly, not, you know, B12 shortage, high ferritin. There's like all these different things. And then it's for one, it's just very overwhelming because there's just so many different pieces, but it's also hard to get the help because the rheumatologist is helpful in saying, this is what you have, but I can only treat if you have certain pain problems, then I can treat that with certain pain medications. Or if you have certain, like, you know, functioning challenges that are caused, I can help you with that. But when they say lifestyle changes, it can be things like lose weight when the fibromyalgia makes you gain weight. Get your sleep to be better when you don't know why your sleep is not good. It's really hard to find. So I think, like, without repeating myself over and over, it's when I talk to someone like you who can see the multiple levels and processes of my system that are involved, or of one's system that are involved, and be able to say, well, you know, you can test for this, and if your mitochondria this, and then you could do this, and then you could eat this or not eat this, and these symptoms. And like you said, it's going to be individualized.
Yeah.
But do I need to cut out alcohol? Do I need to stop eating sugar? And I know you'll say yes about the sugar.
Yes.
Not there.
Just keep asking.
Okay, so I'll tell you what I do. magnesium, glycinate.
What kind? Okay.
Orally. I also do Epsom salt baths, and I also do flotation tank therapy, which is like the really concentrated Epsom salts, magnesium flotation tanks. Yoga, restorative yoga. I try to get cardio too, but not too strenuous, because that's part of it. Like, it, you could work out too much and then you're too fatigued. It's like, how do you know? I want to pursue acupuncture. I'm not doing that. And I have almost completely cut out alcohol for the past few months, but not ready on the sugar yet. I'm trying to be mindful about my sugar intake, and we're even talking about like carbs when we say sugar, right?
Well,
like
refined, rice. Refined. I'm not quite as concerned about rice. It's, let's say, let's think of sugar on a spectrum, but let's first back up and say fibro is an inflammatory issue, meaning when you're under chronic stress, your cortisol is supposed to be able to quench the fire of inflammation. That's part of what cortisol does. It's an anti-inflammatory. Oftentimes, people with fibromyalgia have low cortisol, not always, but it's often low. So that's part of the morning fatigue and the hard to get up and going. And that's why people often gravitate toward the stimulants like sugar. Sugar's a stimulating, but it's also pro-inflammatory food. So what we try to do is say, let's reduce all the exposures that make it harder. The metaphor I use is you're walking up a hill. Let's get the boulders off your back. You're already walking up a hill. You've spent 11 years waiting for a diagnosis, and now you're going to spend a few years trying to get better. And so the first thing is patience, step by step, and let's go step by step in reducing the things that exacerbate the condition and the symptoms. And unfortunately, it is sugar. But I say it doesn't mean you can't have sweetness in your life, because some sweets are going to be more inflammatory than others. So it's not that, you know, nature gave us sugarcane. That's mm-hmm. a sweet plant. But when nature gave us sugarcane, she gave us fiber and magnesium and B vitamins in that sugarcane. So that sugarcane doesn't cause inflammation. It's when we, the pharmacies or corporations, you know, slavery really, on the backs of slaves, you know, that I consider sugar a disease that's come out of the slave trade, because the corporations of the 19th century extracted sugar and it became a major commodity. And we didn't have diabetes type 2 before it became so widely available, sugar, that is, refined sugar. So the principle that I think can be very helpful, Laura, is what did nature give us in terms of nourishing my body, and what's an artifact of modern life? And so refined sugar is not a natural food, and it leads to unnatural consequences. It leads to diseases that we shouldn't have, because we shouldn't really be eating this artifact of sugar. Now, that's a broad statement. We get lots of great pharmaceuticals out of plants, but the problem is we often have the side effects, because plants gave us everything, just like the sugar cane had magnesium and B vitamins to
a complete thing,
that glucose uptake. And it's the same thing with pharmacy that might come out of a plant. Yeah, it'll do the trick, but we're always dealing with these side effects. And so I think in general, our treatment for fibromyalgia takes time to restore what Laura and her beautiful red-haired Celtic origins say, what were the foods of your people? Salmon and seaweed. That's what your people say. Rich diet of omega-3 fatty acids, lots of mineral-rich foods. And that those genetics still hold. And so we begin to look at the restoration of lifestyle in that way. And I think understanding it, understanding why isn't sugar good for me? Then you make a conscious decision. You go to someone's birthday party and you say, you know what? I haven't had sugar for 8 weeks and a piece of cake is not going to do me in. And it isn't. It's that piece of cake every day or three times a week that sends us into overload of inflammatory process. So and alcohol becomes sugar too. So I'm glad that you've cut that back. That'll only be, your liver will be happy.
Yes. Well, and I am using food as medicine. You know, I stopped eating gluten and cow's milk back in 2019. Great. And I think that probably at the time when I stopped eating them in 2019, my symptoms were really bad. And I probably would have fit what I thought fibromyalgia was like if I had continued, if I hadn't made that change. I think that did impact me a lot. And that was from testing that found that I was intolerant to both gluten and casein. But I want to talk about the subject that is sort of maybe the elephant in the room for some people who are listening who aren't really familiar with your work, that you teach clinicians to do what you're doing right here, where you're talking to me about these different things. And I know a lot of clinicians would say, we're not qualified to do that. That's not within our scope of practice. But you have this book, and which is also a second edition. It's very recently updated and it's got a lot of amazing. I mean, you talk about GLP-1s, you talk about, like, there's some stuff in there that I was like, this is brand new. I've only just heard about this lately, and it made it into the update of the book. So will you talk a little bit about how you train therapists and other, I guess, mental health professionals to bring an integrative approach, including nutrition, into their work?
Sure. Well, thank you for sharing the book. I think nutrition is the missing piece in our work as psychotherapists, meaning if we add this in to our work with our clients or with our patients, the benefits and the outcomes are exponentially improved. I feel that strongly about it being a missing piece, just like exercise. I think about it as the triad: psychotherapy, exercise, and nutrition. It's the key to mental health. And without all of them, there are limits on how far people can get. So I try to train clinicians and introduce clinicians to the degree that they are interested. Some go all the way. Some of them even get additional degrees, but certainly the kinds of certifications I do and the book itself gives you a very deep dive into how to integrate this into your practice. And the analogy I also use is that we study psychopharm. It doesn't necessarily mean that we become prescribers, but we're on the first line of complaints. We're in the first line of distress. We're listening to our clients week in and week out talk about their issues and their problems, and pain and sleeplessness and digestion and side effects from medications. And we really benefit as clinicians, and our clients benefit when we know what they're talking about and we have solutions to propose. It doesn't necessarily mean that you need to know it all. You need to know, you know what? The kinds of symptoms you're describing are associated with low levels of vitamin D. Let's get your doctor to prescribe a vitamin D test. What do you think? So it's not necessarily that you need to know, as I would teach you, that optimal vitamin D is 80 nanograms per milliliter in a blood test, that can come later. But just listening and knowing and being there for our clients and understanding the physical side, there's always the physical side to the emotional side. There's always the physical complaint associated, just like anxiety is always associated with disordered breathing. And then if we understand how to intervene with disordered breathing, but understand the physiology of disordered breathing is associated with an alteration of blood gases and how nutrition can alter your blood gases to reduce anxiety. So this is the kind of thing that I want our colleagues to know about. And you can know about it at a very basic level, which is saying, hey, you're describing insomnia, but you're also drinking 3 cups of coffee and 4 Coca-Colas every day. Do you think you're getting too much caffeine? That's a very basic level of being able to engage in self-care. And so I frame all of this work as psychoeducation and enhancing self-care because we're already engaged in that. We're just bringing in the lifestyle piece. We're bringing in nutrition. The other reason it's important is that people are doing a lot of self-prescribing with Dr. Google. And I say, Dr. Google does not know what's right for you. Dr. Google knows in general what's going on, but this is about you specifically. I go into in the book about something called pharmacogenomics, which is gene testing to know what medications work for you and what's dangerous for you. That's something everybody should know about, and very few people do. You mentioned, are you getting enough folate? That's the MTHFR test. If you're deficient in folate, then you can eat more beans and more greens, or you can take a folate supplement along with your B12, and you're going to feel better. You're going to detoxify better. And so just like we trained in our mental health to become competent clinicians, we can study and train in nutritional therapy for mental health to any degree that we wish, whether it's to know enough to make a good referral, to know enough to engage a colleague, or to say, I can make these recommendations for you, which is what my practice is about.
Yeah. Well, I'm just going to name one more thing. Like, it's if we didn't know that, let's say, I always think of hypo and hyperthyroidism and diabetes, these two processes where you have hyperglycemic, hypoglycemic, hyperthyroid, hypothyroid, and you have hyperarousal and hypoarousal in trauma when we talk about our nervous system. So it's like, people may come in with symptoms of hyperthyroid that might look like a bipolar situation. And so if the clinician is only looking at mental health and hearing, I've been unable to sleep, I've been agitated, you know, whatever person's saying, and they're not like, you know, I mean, it could be like, you need to go to the hospital versus, have you had your thyroid checked lately? And it would be a big difference between those two experiences, you know?
Exactly. Because then we're at risk of over-psychologizing a physical imbalance. And that doesn't mean that we're going to be necessarily experts, but we're going to have that lens that makes us question, maybe there's something physical going on.
What could be happening here? What other possibilities, rather than just this looks like bipolar and that's what I know, so that's what I'm going to say is happening. And if you think of that through, like if you were to encourage your client to go to the hospital because you think that they're having a manic episode, yes, they're going to test their thyroid when they get to the hospital anyway. But if they go and the whole idea is their therapist sent them here because, or they say, my therapist sent me here because they think I'm having a manic episode, you know, the whole process is going to be influenced by that. rather than like, let's just like be more curious, and rather than, you know, mental health, that's all I know, that's all it can be. I think it really makes a more complete type of experience when you are saying, you know, this could, even in your mind, this, wonder if,
well, I'll take that one next step relative to your work as someone who's really trying to educate people about trauma. We see a lot of misdiagnosis, as you well know, incorrect diagnosis when it's really a trauma diagnosis. We see ADHD, we see bipolar in particular. Those are the two areas that I think people miss a trauma diagnosis because of mood lability. You know, we won't even get into borderline, which is a specious diagnosis, but let's just focus on the where you've got trauma history and it looks like ADD. Just throw it out and treat the trauma. It's not that there isn't real bipolar. However, when I've so often seen people with that diagnosis when they haven't been diagnosed rightly so, meaning they needed to be for complex trauma, and it explains everything and it resolves everything. We get them off medication because that's what those symptoms were about. And so I think we're looking at layers of how we miss things and why we need to expand our repertoire of knowing more about the physical and the mental and how they work together.
Very, very much so. That's why I am so committed to an integrative approach as the way to go in our work. And obviously always trauma informed, because, you know, as you said, with colonization, there's no one who's not impacted by trauma. There's no one, you know, we all are, our past generations and us all are, we're living in it now. We're all impacted by it.
We're certainly living in it now. Yeah.
Yeah, we are. Leslie, where can people find your courses, your books, your speaking stuff, all the amazing things that you're doing?
Oh, thank you, Laura. I have a website, Dr. Leslie Korn, and you can find everything there. I've got a lot of blogs. All my books are there, and then they're linked on all the different online bookstores. And I've got courses for clients. I've got courses for clinicians. And if people are interested in training or in clinical treatment, all of that's found there. And in terms of my documentary work, people can look up the Center for World Indigenous Studies. And I also have a special page, the Center for Traditional Medicine, within that page. But if you go to videos, you'll see all the documentaries that we've done thus far there. They're all open, except for this newest one, and you'll see the trailer there.
Congratulations on the new, sounds like full-length documentary, and the previous ones as well, and just all the beautiful, important, meaningful, valuable work that you're doing that will...
Thank you.
What a body of work you have. I'm just really amazed by you and super, super grateful that you came back to Therapy Chat today and also to help me understand about my fibromyalgia a little better through this lens. Thank you, Leslie.
My pleasure. Always so wonderful to spend time with you, Laura. And thank you for all the important work you're doing.
Thank you. Therapy Notes is the highest rated EHR, practice management, and billing software for mental health professionals. Its all-in-one platform is designed to streamline all aspects of your practice, from connecting with clients via secure messages to scheduling, notes, billing, and more. You can trust Therapy Notes has you covered. And one of the best parts? 24/7 customer service with a live person. It's beyond easy to get help over the phone or by email at any time of day from their knowledgeable and friendly representatives. The best time to give Therapy Notes a try is now. Sign up for your free trial by going to therapynotes.com, clicking Start My Free Trial, and accessing your first 2 months free with the promo code CHAT. See why Therapy Notes is the most trusted EHR for behavioral health professionals today.
therapists ready to stop just listening and start doing. I offer several ways to work with me and accelerate your trauma expertise. You can join my Trauma Therapist Network membership community for ongoing support, book a one-on-one clinical consultation with me for personalized guidance, or buy my course for clinicians on supporting survivors of sexual trauma, and check out the retreats coming up in 2026. All that info and more is on the For Therapists page of Trauma Therapist Network, and you can find the link in the show notes.
Thank you for listening to Therapy Chat with your host, Laura Regan, LCSWC. For more information, please visit therapychatpodcast.com.